Welcome, everyone, to the Addiction 911 Show. My name is Christina Rowe, and I am here today with Robin Guberman, who is a licensed clinical social worker. And we're going to be talking today about how to survive the holidays with an addict, how to set boundaries and resist temptation to enable your addicted loved one during the holiday season. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Robin. Robin is a licensed clinical social worker who specializes in family therapy and addiction recovery. Robin, originally from New York, has worked in the addiction field for over 20 years. She has been a therapist and a clinical director in some of the most successful treatment centers in the country. She has implemented family programs into treatment centers and believes that the entire family system needs to change for successful recovery to occur. Presently working in private practice, Robin's passion is helping families dealing with the impact of addiction in their lives. Well, welcome, Robin. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Christina. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you know, we're so thrilled that you're here and you're able to share your expertise with us today, because this is really a really tough subject. And, you know, now we're getting close right now to Thanksgiving and then Christmas and Hanukkah and all the different holidays. And this is mm-hmm. a really an emotional time for family members who are dealing with addicted loved ones. So I wanted to ask you, you know, some of the things that you see, what are some of the feelings that come up around this time of year for these families?
You know, I think that on some level, the holidays, you know, are very difficult in terms of sadness, wanting to be with the person in your life that is acting out in their addiction. You know, family systems are getting together. And, you know, they don't want that person that they love not to be present. You know, it's a very difficult time. I think holidays are difficult on people for a lot of reasons. But when you have someone that you love so much acting out, there's a lot of issues that come up, whether having them there present with you was going to be worse than having them, you know, not
right.
there. And I think that families are very, very vulnerable during the holidays, and there's always hope, and there's sadness, and you know, all of those emotions mixed together that families really don't necessarily know how to respond. They want to, you know, respond with love and kindness and hope and togetherness and all of those things. But when you have somebody who is, you know, manipulating and is really active in their addiction, sometimes it's worse, you know, having them there than it is better having them there. And it's a big struggle for families.
Yeah, I can imagine the feeling of, you know, wanting a normal holiday, you know, just and kind of putting on those blinders. Maybe some families that want to do that, you know, they don't want to face it. They want to, so they're maybe, you know, putting up with some of the behavior from the addict of that manipulation, and because they just want things to be okay. Maybe families, you know, flying in from another
exactly.
state, and they just want to put up that front, maybe, you know, and that's
right.
probably how does that, like, if you know, if you get into that, though, how dangerous is that, you know, for the addict and for the family to turn that,
right.
you know, turn your head and
yeah.
have a blind eye?
Right. I think it's, you know, I think it doesn't just happen with the holidays, but it happens a lot during the holidays, because you know, families, if they are working on themselves, and as you said in my intro, you know, families all need to be getting help when somebody, you know, there's an active loved one in addiction, and, you know, that there's things that begin to get set up, so healthy boundaries that begin to get set, some detachment from the addicted loved one's behavior, trying to do some things different as parents and family members in dealing with the person in their life that, you know, is in the throes of addiction. And during the holidays, I think there is a tendency to be a lot of regression. And the regression is based around, it's almost like, well, let's take a time out because it's the holiday. So let's just have them here and take a time out and let's all be together. And then we'll reinstitute our boundaries after the holidays. But the problem with that is there is a mixed message that gets sent to the addicted loved one, and then there's a lot of confusion in the family system once the boundaries begin to decrease and things somewhat go back to normal for the sake, in quotes, of a holiday. You know, I think that all the work that had been done with the family prior to the holiday, you know, to the holidays coming up, it gets thrown out, because once an addict sees that you're going to let your boundaries down, that you're going to back down, that you're going to have them be part of if you put up some strict guidelines for them, then they will begin to use, you know, the holidays as a method of getting their needs met again, of hooking you again, of blackmailing you emotionally on some level because they want to be there, you know.
That's really interesting. So it's another tool for them to use, that it's the holidays and they know that, right, mom and dad and grandma, everybody's going to be very vulnerable at that time. And, you know, and I think that, you know, it's really hard because I see a lot with mothers and family members of addicts feeling, you know, tremendous sympathy for the addict and not wanting to see that side of addiction, that, you know, there is that manipulation, that, you know, they are just feeling, oh, well, poor Johnny or poor Sally, and she can't help it. You know, she's addicted to drugs, and it's not her fault, it's the disease. And then they almost, you know, get themselves trapped into that. Then the manipulation just escalates.
Yes, it definitely, I think, you know, it's very difficult. I used to see it when I worked in treatment centers, when family members would begin sending gifts. And the reason always, you know, for Christmas, for Hanukkah, and the reason was, well, it's the holidays. And it's almost as if the holidays become a separate entity from what's going on, you know, in the family system. Well, we'll excuse it for a minute. We'll put you on timeout for a minute because it's a holiday season or a birthday or whatever it seems to be. They don't want to attach, you know, the holidays to the problem. And, you know, the issue with that is, one, it doesn't work, and two, the message that gets sent to the addicted loved one is, you know, it's okay for the moment. You know, we're going to reward you on some way for continuing to be in the throes of active addiction. And even though family members think that they're doing a good thing by giving gifts, right, by inviting them over, they think in that timeout moment they're doing the right thing, but really the message to the addict is, oh, it's all okay again. And it's, look, they're never going to hold the line. They're never going to keep their boundaries. There's always going to be a holiday or a reason or an excuse for why they're going to back down. And if you're getting rewarded for doing the wrong thing in life, even if it's a holiday, why stop doing it? It just doesn't make any sense for the addict. You know, I wouldn't either. If I could use drugs and I could go to Christmas dinner and get gifts from my family, why stop using? You have your cake and eat it too.
That's really a great point. Right, and that's what the message is being said, but yet, the on the other hand, the family feels so guilty, like, wow, I'm going to really leave my son out, and he's not going to get a gift, and he's in rehab, and he's trying, and
right.
I should send him something. And you know, so I can understand that must be really tremendously hard for the family, but yet so necessary.
Yes. And what you'll find a lot of the time is that, you know, part of the growth in somebody in recovery is when the addict begins to see that there needs to be reciprocal relationships. So, you know, you'll find that the family members are sending gifts or giving gifts, or, you know, the family's inviting them home for the holiday. And, the active addict or the addict in recovery, they're still thinking about what their needs are, what they need to get from the family, that they want to be home. They want to be part of the festivities. They want to get the gift. And most of the time, you'll find out, especially early in recovery or with an active addict, they don't bring a card home to their families. They don't think of getting a gift. There's still an immense amount of self-centeredness. So even when they become part of the festivities, there's always a reminder to the family that they're continuing to give and the addict's continuing to take, if that makes sense.
That's really profound. I mean, that's really so true of addicts, and we don't a lot of times look at it that way because, and I'm just curious what the addiction itself obviously, you know, causes that, and it makes people, you know, addicts become very selfish in that way. Like, I guess it's because it just becomes, because of your being hooked on a drug, it's all about you. You can't even think of other people. It gets to get out of your head, you know, in a way. And like, you're just not thinking clearly. And it just seems that that's just such a trend, that everything is about, like, demanding the family, you know, do something for them or help them or give them something.
Right. The holidays become an opportunity for addicts to hold their family hostage, you know, and that emotionally hostage. And that's the big piece is you're not going to let me be with you on the holidays. How could you not give me a gift? How could you not let me be here for Christmas dinner? And what that does is it plays on, right, the family's emotions. And it makes them feel sad or guilty or vulnerable or wrong in any kind of attempts that they've made to detach from the addict's unhealthy behavior. And the more, as you well know, you get pounded on emotionally, and the holidays is where the addicts make, you know, a big pounding session, the more you get pounded on, the more you get beaten down, and the more you begin to drop whatever guardedness you've put up in terms of the relationship. And they know that. That's why they use the holidays so much in terms of trying to get family members to back down.
Wow, that's fascinating. And what would you suggest, though, that, okay, being in this situation and, like, you know, we would say it's, like, easier said than done. So, like, maybe a mom who's listening to this right now, family member is saying, okay, you know, I understand what you're saying, Robin, and that makes a lot of sense, but I'm still so weak. Like, how do I get the strength to put my foot down and not send that gift and not have them come for the holidays?
You know, I think it depends on, first, what kind of work the family is doing. You know, you really have to know what the family history is, you know, what have been the losses in the family's life, you know, what are the, other than just the addiction, are there grief and loss issues? Is there a history of addiction with other family members? Are there other traumas? Because it's really about what's going on with the family members that prevents them, right, from putting up the boundaries, whatever is unresolved for them. So the first thing to me would be they need to be getting help, and if they're not, the best time to start, maybe you give a gift to yourself for the holidays, and it is going to get some therapy, going to take a look at why the process of you know, non-enabling and setting boundaries is so difficult for you. But if you're not getting the help, it becomes very difficult when someone like me says, well, I think you need to do this. You know, if you're not there and you haven't learned why you do what you do, it's going to be hard for you to set the boundaries. So, you know, on a simple note, I would say if you have an addict in recovery or you have an active addict, you really need to look at, one, don't allow anyone who's using in your house, no matter what. You really need to look at what kind of reciprocity is being given, because the holidays are about togetherness, gratitude, all the things that we're hoping the addict would begin to understand. So if there isn't going to be any reciprocity, you're going to show up with nothing. You're going to have an expectation that all is going to be given to you. You know, you're not showing up with a card for your family. You're not showing up with you know, I don't know, a pie. You're doing nothing.
Right.
Then the family needs to take a look at, if we're continuing to be the givers and the addict in our life continues to be the taker, then maybe we need to step back a little bit, because we're not teaching anything. At this point, our role modeling would be, you know, we're here for you. There's always going to be a place at the table for you, but you need to earn it based on doing the right thing in life. And maybe you can't come for Christmas dinner. Maybe your gift for Christmas is that you go to rehab. And maybe as you begin to do the right things in life, you can earn back, because we'll always love you, and you can earn back a place at the table next Thanksgiving, next Christmas. But you're going to have to show it in your actions, you know, and, you know, that's really the best gift that I can say a family can give. Other than that, if you don't allow the person that you love to fall down and struggle and you keep enabling and you use the holidays as an excuse to do so, you're going to find out that you're becoming part of the problem and you're continuing, you know, the active process of addiction in the family system. So, you know, it's really true.
And it's giving, basically what you're saying is, you know, give the biggest gift that you can give your addict this holiday season this year is the gift of giving them responsibility for themselves and their own actions. And I think that's, I think families, you know, take that away in a way, you know, they take away their responsibility. Like you're saying, you know, you have to earn it. You have to become, you know, a person who cares about others. And, you know, and when you just always enable someone else, you take away that gift. They can't, they don't have it. They become like a little child. They're not able to do or to accept responsibility for their actions.
Right. And that's
so
the
you're not helping them.
Right. And that's the message that, you know, the loved one, the active loved one gets is in the short term, you're saying, well, come home for Christmas dinner, come home, just get your gifts right now, and then you have to leave again. What you're really saying is we don't think you can do it. Right? We don't think that you can make the right decision. We don't think that you can stand on your own 2 feet, because if we don't help you and we don't do it for you and we don't enable you, you're not going to make it. And in the short term, that sounds great, because every family has so much anxiety that if they don't step up and take care of and do it, that the person they love is going to die. So their first thought is, if I take care of it, it will all be okay. But the message you're sending the addict is, you can't do it. We don't believe you can do it. And without our help, you can't do it. So how would you expect the addict to begin to develop any kind of competency and esteem if the message is always, you can't? And we all know, you know, I know, everyone who's ever accomplished anything in life knows that esteem is based on struggle. Competency is based on struggle. Rewards in life are based on our own internal struggle. And when we do something and we do it the right way, we get the rewards, and it's only our reward. No one else gave it to us. And when we fall down, it's only our consequence. And maybe if family members realized that if they allowed the person they love to fall down and face their own consequence, they might be so uncomfortable that they might not want to do it anymore. So the holidays become an opportunity to just continue the same pattern, you know, and to allow, you know, continued unhealthy behavior in the family system, and the families are contributing as much as the active person is. It's a family problem.
It really is a family problem, and I think that what you're saying is so, so true and profound, because It is that, giving them, you know, making them have that responsibility can make all the difference in their, their self-esteem, how they feel about themselves. And so I guess if mothers and family members who are listening to this, if you try to reframe it in your brain, instead of thinking, okay, oh, my God, I'm a bad mother for not sending a gift, you know, or inviting my son to the holidays, or, you know, instead think about, you know, I'm actually hurting my child by inviting them and sending them a gift, because what am I teaching them? I mean, I'm not doing them any favors, and I'm, you know, and you go back to one thing that you brought up, and I hear this so much from parents struggling with addiction is that, you know, oh my God, they're going to die. You know, if I don't do this, I can't leave them out on the street. They're going to die. What if they die? You know, what if they die? That's the constant, you know, the fear, and it's a horrible fear. I mean, you know, as a mother, and thankfully I don't have any addicted children, but I've had my struggles with my teenage sons. I've went through those, and, you know, when nights when they're out drinking and this and that. When you can't find your child, like, you know, it's a horrible, horrible feeling. And I can only imagine the feeling of, you know, that for maybe I felt it for one night with my sons, or a couple hours, you know, frantically on the cell phone. But, I mean, there's parents who go through that for days, weeks, months. I mean, it's a horrible feeling. And my heart goes out for these parents, you know, but what you're saying is so true. You have to kind of like suffer in yourself and let that child, you know, fall through, let their bottom hit the ground so that they
family,
feel it and get
families,
back up.
Exactly. Families need to learn how to manage their anxiety differently, because the reality is what happens is they get so anxious for their loved one that they keep stepping in. And then for a brief moment in time, they get what I call a reprieve, and they take a deep breath and they go, oh, okay, I helped him out. I know where he is tonight. So they manage their anxiety for the short term. But what happens is the addict is dumping the anxiety on the family. The family is taking all the anxiety. And what's the addict learning? Nothing. They're never learning how to manage their own anxiety. So the goal is for family members to begin to dump the anxiety back on the person who's using. And once they can learn how to manage their own anxiety, then they probably won't need something outside themselves to continue to self-soothe. You know,
wow,
so
that is really, really amazing. So you're saying is because they don't know how to manage their own anxiety, they're using the substance for that, because that's what they're numbing them, numbing their own anxiety.
Exactly, and families don't know how to manage theirs. And the way that they do it is by taking care of the problem, right? But instead,
or attempting to, right, trying to control.
Exactly,
right.
But the anxiety is going to come back for the family because there's just all they're doing is allowing the next situation to happen. You know, so I think that it's a vicious cycle that occurs, and lots of family members, what they don't understand, the statistics really show that most deaths from overdose really are in your home, in the parent's home. It's not out on the street, okay? It's when they're sitting in the bathroom on Christmas Eve and they've decided that because it's a holiday, they're going to party more. There's another excuse for them to party more, and there's a lot more overdoses and suicides during the holidays, as I'm sure you already know, because addicts will say to themselves, January 1st, I'm going to go to treatment.
So they
go out with a bang. They come home. You let them come home. They have a safe, warm place to go and use drugs, and that's where they end up overdosing. It's very rare that you find your child on the street from an overdose. Because when you don't have anyone helping you and you don't have a safe place to go or a nice warm bed to sleep in, you know, and you don't have the money that's being provided to you for a Christmas gift, then it's going to be a little bit harder for you to get what you need to get. And I think that it's important for family members to realize that the statistics really do show that most overdoses happen in your home under your roof. And I say to families, and if that happens, then how are you going to feel about the responsibility of your child who's using?
Wow, that's really, yeah, I mean, it's really true, and the fact that, right, when they're feeling comfortable and they're, and what you said is so true, too, is about, it's the same thing we do with food. You know, we're like, oh, well, you know what, I'm going to eat a lot for the holidays, because I know January I'm going to go on an exercise program. You know, most people do that, and the addict is thinking the same way. Well, I can binge now and drink now or take the drugs now because come January 1st, but they may not be a January 1st.
Correct.
It's a little different from eating too much cake as opposed to overdosing on drugs. I mean, there's a huge, huge difference. So I think that point is really, really important. I think that should be a huge motivator for anyone listening to this who's thinking about, you know, maybe giving in this holiday season just to have one more holiday. Or, and you know, it's another thing, families will make, moms will make, will say, well, you know what, he's going to do drugs anyway and he may die next year. This may be our last holiday. I'm sure you hear that too. So that's a cheap excuse to say, okay. And you don't want to make that a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, by that could be, is what you're just saying, that you can actually make it be your last holiday if you give in.
Right.
You know,
and look,
around.
The chance is your loved one's using drugs. They're killing themselves. I mean, that's what they're doing. So it's, you know, it really is either we're going to contribute to what they're already doing. There's nothing that families have been able to do to stop the drug use, right? They have to want to begin to do something different. So you're not stopping it. You're not preventing it. And everything families have already tried to do has failed. So all the enabling's failed, all the lack of boundaries has failed, all the keeping them in your house has failed, all the letting them be with you during the holidays, it's all failed. They're still using. So unless you begin as a family member to do something different, to change the dynamic in the family system, nothing's going to change, right? And that's what we say all the time in the field. If nothing changes, nothing changes. When one person makes a decision or two people in the family decide to do something different, then the entire dynamic is forced to begin to make some changes. And, you know, you have to be willing to start taking some of those steps. It's not an easy thing for any family member to do. You know, it takes baby steps. It takes progress. There's regressions that happen over time. But if they're under somebody's care, and they can have a support system of people in their lives that are going to continue to help them do it, then the chances of the person they love getting better are so much greater. When the family gets better, the addict gets better.
Wow.
That's what the statistics show. Mm-hmm.
It's like what you said is, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And that's what I always think. That always comes to me when I see this with families, because they just do the same patterns over and over again and think something's going to be different. But like you said, nothing changes. So it's so crucial. Now, what happens, though, so you made a point of saying one person makes a change in the family or another. Mm-hmm. What happens, say, if dad says, all right, enough, I am not doing this holiday, and he agrees 100%, but mom can't get there, and so there's that conflict within the divide.
Right. It happens a lot. I see it a lot. We call it the weak link in the family system. What you'll begin to see happen is that the addict also knows that there's a weak link in the family system. So the addict is now going to go for the person that they believe is the weakest. And they're going to prey on them. They're going to blackmail them. They're going to do all of those things. So what I suggest to families is, you know, it can cause problems in marriages. It causes problems in families when one person's on one page and the other's on the other page. The only thing that can happen for a family is if you're done and you've hit your bottom and you have your boundaries, you need to keep them despite what the other people in your family system choose to do. Because after a while, if less and less people in the family system are enabling, the one person that continues to enable is going to get completely overwhelmed because they're going to be the go-to person for the addict. So what you'll find is after a while that gets really tiring for the one person now or the two people now who are putting up with it. And what you'll find is their bottom also will come quicker. Because when
by eliminating the people, like as the family member starts sticking their ground.
Absolutely. And that really is, and it doesn't have to be a continued family argument. It can be, look, you're here and I'm here. You know, I don't want to hear what you're doing to contribute to the problem. You know, don't bring up, you know, that you've given money to me. Don't have him call me for money. I'm not going to be part of this. I am going to detach from this. So if you want to be someone who's going to continue to enable, you have a right to do so, but I'm going to choose to step away. And when
you
get flooded by an addict, right, and you're the only one being flooded by the addict, you're going to get tired quicker.
Hmm. Absolutely. Well, what happens, though, let's say in the scenario with the holidays, let's say mom is insisting on inviting, you know, the son to dinner, and the other family members or one or two say, you know, that's unacceptable because I don't agree with that. Do they not come to family dinner? I mean, or
they
how
might,
do you, like, get in that real-world situation there?
Right. They might need to do that. The family members that are on the same page might need to get together and say, if you're inviting, then we're going to do Thanksgiving somewhere else. You know, we're not going to come this year. Because unfortunately, and it's very sad, but unfortunately, if there's no consequence, there's no change.
And somebody's got to set the example.
Absolutely. And no one said it was easy. And no one said that, you know, every family is going to be able to do it. You know, and it depends really emotionally on where you're at. And I can't expect as a therapist every family member to be where I believe they should be. So maybe it starts for some families with, if you're using, to the active person, if you're using, don't come. If you come and you use, you're going to be asked to leave. You know, any of those things, I don't recommend that, but some families aren't ready to do more than that. So if you can agree, anything you can agree on as a family system that is different, even if it's a baby step, different from what you've done before, you'll begin and stay consistent with what you do. Then you'll begin to give the active person a different message. But you have to be consistent. If there's no consistency, it makes no difference.
So it's, you're kind of wiping out everything that you've done. Because I've seen people do that where, you know, they'll maybe say, okay, well, I'm not speaking to the addict because, you know, until they're clean. So for 30 days, unless you're clean, don't call me. So maybe they make it, you know, for 10 days. And then all of a sudden, they pick up the phone accidentally, of course, you know, when they got a call, and now they're back in again. And then this happens again and again. And it's like, you know, oh, and they keep saying the same thing. Well, I'm not going to talk to you because, you know, for 30 days, but they keep giving in. So that message, it just never goes anywhere. It's like being
It's actually more detrimental. That's what I tell families. If you're going to put up the boundary that you're not going to be able to keep, then you are now becoming more detrimental to that person, the active addict, than anything else. Because what you're teaching them is what I say as a parent, as a family member, and what I do is inconsistent. I tell you I'm going to do one thing, and then I do something else, which means they're never going to believe you, first of all. Anything that you say is never going to be believed. And then I'll tell the family member, if you're not consistent in the things you say that you're going to do and you're not role modeling healthy behavior, why should your addict role model healthy behavior? It's got to start with the family. So if you can't do the big things, but you can do the little things as a family. So you can't come here if you show up high. You can't call me when you're high. If you call me, I'm going to hang up the phone. And you continue to do that, the addict will stop calling you. It might take them 10, 15, 20 times because they're going to test you. And they're going to try to wear you down. And they're going to try to emotionally blackmail you to get you to pick up the phone. But if you stop and you stay consistent, they will begin to understand that when they're high, they're not calling you anymore. And it works. And those are the programs that I've developed in treatment centers with families. And I've had an immense amount of success. It's the motto that I use is consistency in action over time equals recovery. It's consistency with the families, and it's consistency with the addict.
And it makes such perfect sense, Robin, because it's exactly the same thing when you're dealing with, like, a small child, you know, when you're teaching, it's the same thing. If you keep saying, well, you know, if you do that, I'm going to put you in your room. If you do that, and you just never do it, and then the kid's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse and then become like a tyrant. And you see that even with little kids. So it's like the same thing. It's like this, if you were able to, you know, if you can't, it's the parenting aspect comes in that it's the hardest way to do it. But if you don't set those boundaries, whether with an addict or a child, you're going to have an out-of-control person on your hands. And it just makes perfect common sense what you're saying, that that's probably the only way to get an addict to start taking responsibility.
It really is. And it really is about, you know, baby steps. And, you know, I can't stress enough, don't tell an addict that you're going to put up a boundary that you know you're not going to be able to put up. Or don't keep putting up the same boundary. If you have to put up a boundary that is less dramatic, but you're able to stay with it, then that would be better than going back on what you say you're going to do. Because then they'll just never believe you, and they'll keep manipulating, and they'll keep holding you hostage, and it'll just never end.
It never does, and it's so true that you know, having that, you know, always having, like, giving it's what's that expression, if you give an inch, they take a yard. And and we're not giving these kids or these addicts any opportunity to stand up for themselves and become the people that they're meant to be by constantly feeling sorry for them. And I can use an example of this in my own life with my son, who I told you before has ADD. And I had a bad habit as in my four children. And when he was a teenager and stuff, he would always come in and act depressed to me. And I would take him to all these doctors. And then my mother would catch him, like, laughing with his friends. And he'd come in my room and lay on the bed, act all depressed. And I was constantly babying him and enabling him. Feeling sorry for him. And, like, he'd be like, you know, I'm so depressed, Mom. You know, if I had a video game, maybe that would help me. And then I'd go run by him and get a video game. And, like, he was doing terrible in school. And it wasn't until he went back to New Jersey where my ex-husband lives, and he went back to live with my ex-husband, that he completely changed. Because now Mommy wasn't there to baby him. And now he went to school. He graduated with A's, believe it or not, at automotive school. He's working on trucks, loves it. You know, working tremendous hours, and it's like a complete turnaround when I stepped out of the picture. because I was actually hurting him. You know, I'm using this example, but it's not exactly drugs, so he was dabbling in things, but it is an example of a mother, you know, being too involved and making excuses. Because, you know, a lot of times when you see with addiction, a lot of times it's the dual diagnosis. So these kids maybe do have bipolar, or they do have other issues, or there was a terrible divorce, or they went through something traumatic. That's most people. So it's so easy for the parent to feel sorry for that child and use that as an enabling excuse.
Right. They do. You're absolutely on target. It does get used as an enabling tool. It's always, but they have depression, they have anxiety, they have a learning disability, they have, you know, whatever it is. And that becomes, again, the tool that's used to blackmail. You know, it's, well, mom, I'm depressed, that's why I did this. But the reality is there's help for that too. And there's medication for those things too. And if you're doing and taking the suggestions of the people that can help you, then there's no reason that you can't function successfully in life with depression or with bipolar disorder or a learning disability. You can. The goal is to increase expectation. The goal is to develop greater competency, right? So they say a lot of the time that when an addict uses, they stop growing emotionally, spiritually, intellectually. So if you're dealing with someone who's acting in their addiction like they're a 16-year-old and you're continuing to treat them like a 16-year-old without any level of expectation, without raising the bar, without expecting that they're able to develop competency and push them to do so, how are they ever going to do it? They're never going to get there. So if you keep jumping in and enabling and doing for them what they're capable of doing for themselves, and then expecting them to get better, you're being a contradiction in the process. It's not going to happen. So, it's they absolutely can get better. They absolutely can develop the competency. They absolutely can be responsible, self-sufficient, independent adults and children.
And even no matter what challenges they have. And you see that. I mean, you can see shown on the TV these inspirational stories of people who, overcome cancer, kids, people who have been in horrendous situations, who took, had challenges and overcame them without using drugs, there's a choice for everybody, no matter how bad your circumstances. And I think that, as mothers, we have to remember that we can't, a child, no matter what challenges they face, needs to become a complete adult by learning and not being enabled.
Exactly. And there's a difference, between help and enabling. And help is really about taking a look at how much is the person I love putting into their own well-being, right? Is it reciprocal? Is this relationship, are they giving as much as they take? And I stress that consistently, because that's when the person in your life is getting better, when they think outside of themselves, when they do as much for themselves as you're doing for them. And moving forward, there's always room for what I call sober negotiation, right? Which means you do for you consistently over time, and then maybe I'll help you. But you always need to be doing for you. Otherwise, you're never going to get where you need to go. It just isn't going to happen. It's definitely a long process, and the holidays really, they really become regressive for a lot of families, unfortunately, when that's the time that they could really be giving the biggest message, which is we love you and we want you to be here, but you need to earn a spot here by beginning to do things in life that you're capable of doing. And when you do, we're going to welcome you home to sit at our table, because the chair will always be here waiting for you, no matter what.
So it's you can use this opportunity now with the holidays to turn it into a huge advantage and send a very clear message to the addict in your life by implementing what you're saying, Robin. If people listen to this now and say, it's going to be hard. It's going to be probably one of the most difficult things you could ever do, and heartbreaking, obviously, to turn away someone you love so dearly or not send a gift. I mean, that's just, you know, that's really,
right.
it's a horrible feeling to even think about for a parent to have to do
right.
that. Yet, that I can save your child's life, in, you know,
yeah,
and it could
absolutely.
Be something so send such a clear message that I think, you know, I can't even imagine being in that situation, but I mean, you'd have to basically, you know, put your hands under your butt and sit there and not make a move because you can't
right.
give in. You have to gather
right.
and muster every ounce of strength that you have not to give in. This holiday
yeah,
season.
And you know, one of the things I tell families, and they like this one a lot, is I say to them, you know, it's not loving them less, you know, it's loving them different, because whatever you've been doing isn't working. It might have worked for all your other children, but it's not going to work with someone who has impulsive and compulsive behavior. The way you're parenting does not work for them anymore. So if you keep loving them the same, you're going to get the same results. If you love them different, you're destined to get different results.
Wow, that is very, very profound. And it's so true when you have, and any mother can tell you this, when you have, you know, more than one child, kids are completely different. And you're
yeah.
right, you could have done, you know, the parented all four or three, two kids all the same way, and they just, one will, you know, just respond differently. And then that's going to be, you can't, you know, you have to change what you're doing with that. You cannot, you know, say, well, my daughter turned out fine, and I did that with her, so it's okay that I do it with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
mm-hmm.
Like you said, this is different types of impulsive behavior, and it's a different type of child that
yep.
needs a different kind of love.
Absolutely. And I would really stress, because what I see happen the most is that, you know, the person in the family that's doing the wrong thing is the one that's getting all the attention during the holiday, right? The worry, the concern, the help, the enabling. What about the kids in your family or the sister, the brother that's doing the right thing? What happens to them during the holiday? They get lost. And shouldn't the child that's doing the right thing, the one that's there, the one that's doing well in school, the one that listens, the one that abides by rules, they should be getting the love, the attention, the nurturing, the hope, all of that. And instead, it's always the child that's doing the wrong thing that's getting all of the attention. And there needs to be a switch there too, because what you're going to end up with is the child that's doing the right thing is going to begin to feel lost.
Oh, yeah. And if they're young children, you know, you can actually have another addict on your hands in a couple of years, because they're seeing that mom, you know, mom is always giving love to the addict, and that person does wrong things, yet I do well.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
they can churn. Because they,
right.
and it's such a clear indication. And I can actually speak personally of that. When I was growing up, I was always like a really good student. I was so good. I had a younger brother who had, he was, you know, acted out. He was getting in trouble at school. He never got good grades. He had some learning problems. And my parents always gave that attention. Like, I was a good one. He was mm-hmm. the one focused was on. And then when I became a teenager, it switched. Then I started acting out. I became a rebellious
right.
teenager because I wasn't
right.
getting that attention. It was always, if I brought
right.
home a B plus or an A minus, my parents would say, oh, well, see, that means you can't always. And then on to him, if he got a C, everybody was clapping and jumping up and down.
Exactly.
So it really, I could tell you from personal experience, that
mm-hmm.
feeling of being that child,
right.
you will, your other kids are really suffering to see. And they're figuring, well, if my brother's doing drugs, then maybe I should be doing drugs. And I'll get all this love and attention.
Right. Or
that's
the
scary.
Other piece. That, right. Or the other piece that happens is the child that's doing the right thing becomes extremely perfectionistic. Right, because they're not allowed to make any mistakes, because there's so much trouble with the one that is making the mistakes that the other child can't do anything wrong. That's what they begin to think, that they have the burden of all the responsibility in the family system. They're not going to make dad and mom more upset, right? They're not going to do anything that would ever upset them or hurt them or destroy them more than the person in the family system that you know, is doing it all the time. And then you start seeing a lot of other issues, you know, that need to be a perfectionist, that need to take on the responsibility. And then you get, you know, an adult child of an alcoholic, and you begin with all those traits, which it's a very vicious cycle. And, you know, I can just tell you that every single person in the family system needs to make changes. It's not just the person with the addiction. This is a family problem. It's not the addict problem.
And that's so true. And I didn't even think of that. What you're saying is so true about the child who becomes the perfectionist. And a lot of times, don't those children grow up to be codependents and maybe marry
Absolutely.
An alcoholic or have a, you're always trying to fix others and be perfect.
Yep.
And that's so
yep.
it becomes such a vicious cycle.
It does. It really, really does. And they end up with a lot of other emotional issues, depression, anxiety, you know, eating disorders. You know, lots of things that end up happening because they feel no control over the situation that they're in. And so we can't forget about them, and I stress that a lot in the family programs that I run, you know, is what are you doing
wow.
with the child that's doing well?
Yeah, that is, I mean, these are really, you know, such important things for people who are listening today to really, 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 you know, take note of here is that it's not just your addicted child. It's your
mm-hmm.
other children. It's your husband or your wife. It's your entire family network that's being affected.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest gift, like we said earlier, that you can do is to this year do something different. And
why
and break,
does,
try
why
to break
does the
it.
Child, right. And why does the child that's doing the right thing have to deal with a Christmas that's going to be completely centered on if the addict is there, whether or not they're using, whether or not they show up, whether or not they create a disaster, right? Why does the entire family system and all the people that are there for the joy of the holiday have to have a holiday that's consistently dampened by the one person that's not doing the right thing? What about all the people that are there for the right reasons? Why does their
wow.
holiday have to be ruined?
That's so true. That's a really great question. So as we end here, Robin, and this has been absolutely fantastic. I mean, you've shared so much and it's been so eye-opening. What would your parting advice be? I mean, we've really said everything to it, but just a last
mm-hmm.
bit of you know, like tips that just enable to implement what you've said today. What would be your best piece of advice?
I would tell family members, if you're not getting the support that you need to get, give yourself a gift, go to therapy to figure out why you keep doing what you do, go to an Al-Anon meeting, go to Families Anonymous, begin to get a support system to start managing your anxiety differently so you don't continue to, you know, throw your all, you know, take care of your anxiety by continuing to enable. I would say start with baby steps. What are the boundaries that you can begin to hold to that you're not going to break, that you can be consistent with? You know, and try to remember that the more family members that are aligned in doing things differently, the quicker you're going to change the dynamic of the family system and hopefully begin to, you know, start something different with the addict and help them get some help and make some change.
Well, that is really, really great advice, Robin. And as we end here, can you please let us know where the best way to contact you would be? And I know you practice in Boca Raton, Florida, and there'll be people probably,
mm-hmm.
you know, all over the country listening to this. But if you can tell us a little bit about, you know, how someone could reach you and maybe, you know, learn more about your services.
Yeah, sure. You can go to my website. It's farofboca.com. And it shows you all of my my information, my experience. I have some posts on there about good books that you can go to read that will be helpful for you as well. My office number is on my website, or you can contact me directly at my office number, which is 561-235-2292. I'm also on Facebook, FAR of Boca. And Twitter, so you can contact me there as well.
Wonderful. And I'm going to put all that information in the show notes as well, so this way you can just click over to Robin's website and I'll put the phone number and the ways, different ways to reach her. So this way that'll be very helpful. Well, thank you so much, Robin. I hope you have a wonderful holiday and a happy holidays to everyone who is listening. And, you know, my prayers go out to everyone. And, you know, we know how hard this is for you, and this is a really difficult time. But please, you know, if you have to listen to this again, because the advice here that Robin has shared is just incredible. And I really, really thank you for it, and you're helping so many people.
No, absolutely. I thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And, you know, anyone can call me at any time, and I'm more than willing to just have a conversation and try to see what I can do for you. And if I can't, then I can definitely link you to somebody that can.
That is so generous and wonderful of you. Thank you so much, Robin.
Absolutely. Thanks, Christina, for having me. Have a wonderful holiday.
You too. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.